as I indicated in the opening words, I actually don't expect to have unanimity or close to it when we get to talking about the issue of torture. There's a reason that it's controversial. Gets very complicated. It gets very, very complicated. Torture should not be a partisan political issue. It should be a moral and human issue, but it is a partisan and political issue. Torture should, in my view, never be legal, should never be sanctioned. It seems to me to be, at almost every level, pretty clearly wrong. And I said almost and pretty, because I don't want to get into absolutism here, because it is a little bit more complicated, and more complicated than the partisan political people are willing to admit. Part of this is, of course, political, attacking and defending. Part of it is just kind of getting in the way, which is, well, what do we mean by torture? And trying to get into definitions of it, which I think really misses the important points about what our duties are as human beings one to another. We all agree that torture is kind of a bad thing to do as a matter of policy, but we disagree about what exactly is torture. And I don't mean to make light of it, but when I sing at home, my wife considers it to be torture. She has a very kind of loose definition of it in my view. In her view, it's not such a loose definition. We talk about whether or not our activities meet the definition of torture. The Geneva Convention is pretty clear. It's not very ambiguous, and I have lots of friends on the pro-torture side who say, well, you know, this is really vague stuff because we have agreed not to offend the dignity of captives and prisoners. We have agreed not to cause violence or pain intentionally. The various torture memos that have rationalized the case for why torture isn't torture are, in my view, tortured logic. And they attempt to get out of our breaking of the Geneva Convention by basically saying, well, if we do it, it isn't torture because we as Americans don't torture. That is tautological, but completely illogical. Torture is, however we get into the issues of definition, like pornography. We might not be able to define it, but we pretty well recognize it when we see it. And we would certainly recognize it if it were being done to any of our children, and we'd certainly recognize it if it were being done to us. But it doesn't mean that the world agrees on exactly what techniques are torture and what techniques are just really, really necessary because it's really, really important. All of us have been faced with the talking heads talking about, well, if there is the 24-hour scenario, there's a ticking time bomb and it's nuclear, and would you twist somebody's arm in order to get the information? That this seldom happens in real life, in real death, is quite beside the point. But it's an argument that is made because all of us respond as individual human beings to our own fears and our own passions. If I may make an analogy, and why not, it's my sermon, it is when Michael Dukakis was pitched the slow ball, those of you, some may not be old enough to remember this, by Bernie Shaw, and it was, you're against the death penalty, and if God forbid somebody should rape or murder your wife, how would you feel about the death penalty? And Michael Dukakis gave the worst answer in the history of political answers. He said, well, I would try to understand the sociological forces that made somebody violent and extreme. I'd have commissions formed to discuss the problems of violence and rage in our cities. The right answer is I'd tear out his heart and feed it to him. But that doesn't make it right, and it should never make it legal. There is a difference between what I would do under certain circumstances and what is the right thing to do. What is the legal thing to do? If we make it right and legal, if we really, 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 really believe that something is important and we could get life-saving information, then everything becomes important. The history of prosecution of spy cases is nobody ever steals a trivial secret. They only steal the crown jewels of American science and American intelligence. Whoever it is the crown jewels. Exigent circumstances, a la 24 hours, will expand beyond any conceivable horizon of decency if we allow and legalize and create exceptions for torture. Now, the biggest controversy politically is, of course, whom should we punish if America has tortured? And I don't think that the if is, in fact, a legitimate question. Stripping men naked is, most of us, at least not at the Benneville, would consider that to be an offense against our dignity. Being piled up into a pyramid naked would also be an offense against dignity. Being slammed against a wall, even if it's a soft wall and they put on a neck brace so that you don't get whiplash when they throw you against the wall, seems to me to be on its face violent, possibly. Being yelled at and screamed at seems to me to be insulting. And being waterboarded, 188 times in the course of a month, six times a day, with the great fear that you're actually going to die, does seem to me to fit the definition of torture. But prosecuting people for torture is not a slam dunk conviction, and people need to understand that. If you looked and remembered the Rodney King incident and the people who were prosecuted for the beating, their defense was to deconstruct the event. Well, you chased him on the freeway at 110 miles an hour in a Yugo. Already we have a problem with the credibility of the witnesses. Yugos actually don't go 120 miles an hour unless they've gone over a cliff and reached terminal velocity, in which case you actually don't need to beat the person who was in the car. They've suffered enough. But what they did was they deconstructed it. Was that first blow justified? How about the second? When did it become non-justified? That's exactly the defense around torture. It's the weight of 1,000 or 1,000,000 snowflakes. Well, if you put somebody in a room and it's 40 degrees, is that torture? Well, how about 38 degrees? Well, okay, how about 38 degrees and you throw water on them? At what point does that become the inflicting of pain, not as punishment, but as torture in order to extract information? When you bend the arm at 90 degrees is a torture, at 100 degrees is a torture, it will get deconstructed. If you read the torture memos, which was tortured logic, it was very great specificity to present the cover of legitimacy. If you hold the bottle that you're pouring the water at less than 45 degrees, it's not torture. At more than 45 degrees, it would just be wrong. If you hold it close to the mouth within 4 inches, it's not torture. At 6 inches, it becomes torture, presumably because of the velocity of the water at different angles and at different distances. Defense witnesses would be called to say, just a second, as a soldier in training, I was waterboarded and I don't consider it to be torture. It will be expert personal accounts from uniformed, decorated soldiers. And of course, there's a great big difference between being waterboarded when you're a prisoner and you don't know if you're going to live or die, and being waterboarded in training, where you have a pretty good idea that they're not actually going to kill you. Because part of the rationale of torture is, much of the rationale of torture, is in terms of the spirit as much as it is about the body. So when we get to the discussion part about what we as a country should do, remember that maybe the worst case scenario is indicting people, trying them, and having juries release them and find them not guilty or have a hung jury, which, given as high up as the memos go, has every likelihood. And how up do they go? We have servicemen and women who have done time and are doing time for following orders. Now, I'm not going to do the Nuremberg defense and say they were only following orders. They could have said no and been punished, but that, as I'll get to later, would have been okay. One, we know, killed herself rather than participate in following these orders. But no one can seriously believe that we undertook these policies, that we outsourced some of the enhanced interrogation. Enhanced interrogation is the euphemism for torture, as ethnic cleansing is for ethnically based murder. Let's call this stuff what it is. Would I ever torture anyone? Yes. Yes. Doesn't make it right, though. Doesn't make it right. That's the important distinction. When it becomes policy, when aberration becomes law, when it is just a question of the sincerity and the passion of my beliefs that's the justification, then we're in very difficult waters, and we are in very difficult waters. We're in a situation where, and this, I don't mean to be political about this, but President Obama is trying to finesse the issue, and he can't do it, in my view, successfully, morally or legally. He wants it to stop with the people that wrote the memos. This is like prosecuting the people that designed Auschwitz and not the people that either implemented the policy, some degree of culpability, the people that laid the track for the trains, some degree of culpability, the people that put Jews and communists and homosexuals on and gypsies on those trains, some degree of culpability. But most of all, the culpability goes to the person that said, yes, make it so, I'm the decider. In my view, you cannot punish simply the people following orders. I don't give them a pass, but if you're not going to take it all the way to the top, then I can't see these service people in. But we're a nation of laws. We prosecute war crimes. Yes and no. At the end of World War II and up to this day, we prosecute German war crimes. And you won't hear me saying we shouldn't. We prosecute the people that said put them on the trains. We prosecuted the people that designed the camps. We prosecuted the people that said make it so. And we prosecuted the guards. Japan was a whole different story. Japan, by the 1950s, we said no more war crimes because we needed Japan. We needed the emperor. Anybody have any doubt that if we caught Hitler, he would have been prosecuted? Hirohito, we did not prosecute. We said he's out of the loop. He doesn't have any real power. I believe that politics and expediency got in the way of justice, and maybe that's justified. Maybe it's, I'm not making the justification, I'm just telling you, we needed to have the cooperation of the Japanese people, which meant giving the emperor a pass, and we needed it to rebuild it. We needed it in order to face China, and we needed Japanese cooperation in Korea. In other words, politics and expediency get in the way of justice in its purest form. Don't attack me. This is a description, not a position that I'm taking. So what do we do? You know, from my viewpoint, if Holder, and it's not Obama's decision, it's the Attorney General's decision, because part of what happened at this election was trying to take politics and the White House out of the Attorney General's office. If Holder just goes at the memo writers, I will be very unhappy. I think this is a Colin Powell. If you don't have a strategy for overwhelming force and taking it where it goes all the way, then you shouldn't do it. I would like to see, and I know this is crazy, but stick with me through the last two paragraphs here. I come from a tradition of civil disobedience. I have marched, I have picketed, I have sat in. Never in doing any of those things, whether it was for integration or fair housing or about wars, did I ever expect amnesty. I followed the rules. I was never violent. I never conspired to be violent. But I expected to be pushed. I expected to be hassled. I expected to be arrested. And in line with Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Thoreau, I put my trust in jury nullification. I put my trust in the people making the decisions, judges and juries, having a higher and deeper sense of justice than just the ink on paper. I expected them not to do all of the time the legal thing, but to try to do the right thing. I followed the rules of civil disobedience. If the police said, leave, I sat. If the police said, sit, I marched. And I got pushed and hassled and hit and occasionally arrested. But civil disobedience depends on the belief that ultimately people seek justice. If our brave soldiers are willing to fight and to die for our country, I believe if the circumstances are truly exigent, that they should stand, as I did, before juries and say, this is what I did, these were the circumstances, and to trust the juries to mostly get it right. In fact, the evidence from court-martials so far, not on torture, but on murder, has been mostly to say, no, you were following the rules of engagement. Most of the court martials, when we have had soldiers charged with murder, did not find them guilty. I think that this is a legitimate and honorable way of handling this. It is torturing reason to try to redefine torture as something absurd. I don't think it is torturing logic for us to say the only way to keep it personal and rare is never to say it's okay. The moment we say it's okay, if you really, 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 really believe it's important, as I said before, everything will become really, 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 really important. There needs to be an objective trier of fact, trier of truth, trier of judgment. Because otherwise, we are degrading our Constitution into a slippery slope of chaos. Civil disobedience can operate two ways. It can operate with the person saying, no, I'm not going to do this enhanced interrogation. Or it can work as, I know it's against the law, but I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to hide behind locutions, and I'm not going to hide behind definitions. I'm going to say, there was a ticking bomb, this is what I did, these were the results, deal with me. I think, though morally complex and not easy, it is at least one model for pulling back from the brink of violence and chaos that hurts us as a nation, hurts the people certainly who are tortured, but the other thing that it hurts the people doing the torturing. You can't waterboard somebody 186 times in a month and not have it change how you see the nature and dignity of a human being. You're not the same. What about the uniformity of justice? I know that I've told some of you about my friend Mike, last name to be left out because I don't know that there's a statute of limitations. But Mike was a soldier in Vietnam, and he talked about pushing Viet Cong prisoners out of helicopters in order to get the next prisoner to talk. Mike was 23 when I knew him. He'd gone to Vietnam when he lied about his age. When he was 17, he arrived when he was 18. He had the Tontine, the survivor's prize. His squad had, each one had signed a $20 bill, and he had it. He was the last man alive. He woke up screaming every night. We can't imagine, some of you have experienced, but those of us who haven't, we cannot imagine what courses through people in truly exigent circumstances. We can't imagine the passion, the fear, the anger. We mustn't give that a free pass. We mustn't say it's okay. We must say that all of us are subject to the law and come out of the closet and stand proudly and tell us what you've done and trust in the sense, the reasonableness, and a higher, deeper sense of justice in the American people than simply what is in ink.